The sky wept. Sorrow flooded the earth. Starling opened her mouth to catch the raindrops falling through the hole in her cordon. The seed bear's transparent sanctuary was pitched over the bonfire like a camper's cozy tent. It sealed out the deluge, except for the small opening at the top, meant to vent the fire's smoke and admit a sample of the rain. Drops dampened Starling's tongue. They were salty. She tasted ancient uprooted trees, oceans reclaiming land. She tasted black water on coastlines, gulfs engulfed, withering wildflowers, parched highlands, everything salt-poisoned, a million rotting corpses. Eureka's tears had done this, and more. Starling smacked her lips, probing the rain for something else. She closed her eyes and rolled the rain over her tongue, like a sommelier sampling wine. She could not yet taste Atlantean spires interrupting sky. She could not taste the edges of Atlas, the evil one. This was good, but confusing. Tears shed by the Tearline girl were meant to bring Atlantis back. Preventing those tears fall had been the seed bearer's single objective. They had failed. And what had happened? The flood was here, but where was its ruler? Eureka had brought the horse, but not its rider. Had the Tearline swerved? Had something gone wrong in the right way? Starling hunched over the fire and studied her nautical charts. Teardrops streamed down the cordon walls and sheets, accentuating the warmth and brightness of the citronella-scented space inside. If Starling had been someone else, she might have curled up with a mug of cocoa and a novel, let the rain lull her into another world. If Starling had been someone else, old age would have killed her millennia ago. It was midnight in the Kisatchi National Forest in central Louisiana. Starling had been waiting for the others since midday. She knew they would come, though they had not discussed this location. The girl had wept so suddenly. Her flood dispersed the seed bearers along this vile new marsh, and there had been no time to plan their regrouping. But here was where it would happen. Yesterday, before Eureka cried, this site had sat 150 miles from the Gulf. Now it was a shard of disappearing coastline. The bayou, its banks, dirt roads, dance halls, twisting live oak trees, antebellum mansions, and pickup trucks, lay entombed in a sea of selfish tears. And somewhere out there swam Ander, in love with the girl who'd done this. Resentment brewed inside Starling when she thought of the boy's betrayal. Beyond the flame's glow, against the sideways rain, a shape emerged from the forest. Croesus wore his cordon like a slicker, indiscernible to any but seed-bearer eyes. Starling thought he looked smaller. She knew what he was thinking. What went wrong? Where is Atlas? Why are we still alive? When he reached the edge of Starling's cordon, Croesus paused. Both of them braced for the rough blast that would signal their cordons joining. The moment of their union struck like lightning. Starling crossed her arms to withstand the gale. Croesus squeezed his eyes shut and struggled forward. Her hair waved like a cobweb against her scalp. His jowls flapped like flags. Starling noted these unflattering aspects in Croesus, saw him note the same in her. She reassured herself that seed bearers aged only when they felt affection. Venice is no more, Starling said, as Croesus warmed his hands before the fire. She had coordinated what her taste buds told her with her charts. Most of Manhattan, all of the Gulf. Wait for the others, Croesus nodded into the darkness. They are here. Cora staggered toward them from the east, Albion from the west, the storm glancing off their cordons. They approached Starling's cordon and stiffened, girding themselves for the unpleasant entry. When Starling's cordon had absorbed them, Cora looked away, and Starling knew her cousin didn't want to risk feeling nostalgic or pathetic. She didn't want to risk feeling. It was how she had lived for thousands of years, never looking or feeling older than mortal middle-aged. "Starling is listing the fallen lands," Cretius said. "It doesn't matter." Albion sat down. His silver hair was soaked, his neat gray suit now mud-stained and torn. "A million deaths don't matter?" Cretius asked. "Didn't you see her tears' destruction on your journey here? You have always said we were the protectors of the waking world." "What matters now is Atlas,"